Welcome to Fiber Talk. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And our guest this week is the Twisted Stitcher, Vonna Pfeiffer. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Okay, first question out of the gate. Where did the Twisted Stitcher come from?
Yeah, that is the best name ever.
I was born in 1970. So during the 80s, the band, the Twisted Sister, was very popular, and my brother had all of their albums, and I really didn't like their music, but when I was trying to come up with a catchy name for my blog, I was thinking Stitcher, and I thought, hey, Twisted Stitcher, the Twisted Stitcher, so that's how I came up with it.
And so this is funny because everything ties together. Dee Snider, who is the lead singer of Twisted Sister, lives in the same town as I do. Because they are a local band to me, and I think their drummer went to the same high school I did. So there you go.
There you go.
All tied together. But yes, awesome name.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
And you can always blame it on your brother, so that's good.
That's right.
Okay, so I was watching some of your videos. Just because I want to learn how to finish. And so, I mean, not just in preparation for this, but in general, been watching your videos. And in the background, you have, it looks like a Sterlite or Tupperware type, a tall box with threads hanging in it. And I had not seen that kind of thread storage. So I got to know, how are you doing that? How are you hanging the threads in that box?
Okay. Before we even start, though, can we talk a little bit about what your specialty is and why?
Oh, okay. Background.
Probably do that, right? Yeah. So Gary's assuming that everyone has his basis of knowledge. So I will represent everyone else and say, so tell me about what you do.
I'm a cross stitcher, and I have stitched since I was 15 years old. I'm 46 currently. So that means I've been stitching for 31 years. I learned to cross stitch on my own, essentially. My stepmother, when I was visiting my father for summer vacation, they both worked, and I was bored during the day, and I believe that she knew that I was bored. And so she gave me two small little cross stitch kits. I believe they were probably dimension kits of two little teddy bears. And one of them said, good night. And the other one said, sleep tight. And she gave them to me. And she told me, here, do this. And I read the instructions. And I voraciously finished the first one the very first day. They were about ornament size. And I finished the second one. The next day, she took me to, I think, probably somewhere like Target or Kmart, and I got a larger kit, and the rest is history. I have been cross-stitching ever since 1985, so that's what my background is. That's what my, I guess that's what everybody probably knows me for, is my cross-stitching and my finishing, and that my cross-stitching just evolved into my finishing. About the time that bulletin boards were very popular on the internet, I became very active on a exchange bulletin board, and I started a blog, and Diane Williams of Little House Needleworks, who is a designer in the cross-stitch industry, contacted me about model finishing for her, and that was about 2008. And ever since then, I have been a finisher for people in the cross-stitch industry, designers. And I opened in the fall of 2008 the Twisted Stitchers finishing service. And I have been finishing for the public since that time.
So for people who are not needlework people, can you explain what goes into finishing?
It's essentially the people that cross-stitch, or, you know, as myself included, after the piece is finished, if you do not want to frame that piece, which can be very expensive for smaller, this wouldn't be like a very large type project, but for smaller ornaments, Stockings is a good example of things that people need finished, ornaments, pillows, that sort of thing. I take the raw product that they have stitched and then finish it and transform it into a fully finished object.
Okay, so that makes sense because I recently, having sat with a quilt top that I had quilted and then, or I have not quilted, that I pieced and then did not quilt for over a decade, embarrassingly, have just discovered that there are services that do exactly that, where you can ship out your quilt top and somebody with a long arm machine will quilt it for you. And at first my feeling was that seems really like cheating, but now that you say that this is an actual thing, now I don't feel like that would be cheating, and I'm giving myself permission to send my quilt out to actually have it finished. So thank you for explaining, and thank you for giving me permission to do what I thought was cheating.
It's not cheating.
Yeah, good. See, now I feel so much better. Okay, Gary, now you can ask about your threads.
You got all your background things out of the way so I can get to the questions?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
So, you know, but you mentioned dimensions. I wonder how many tens of thousands dimensions kits have been sold and started people. I know I started with more than one.
I did too. So did I.
It's widely available. They're simple. You know, they have everything from start to finish, how to do it in there. And I think that's probably how many of us got started, especially in the 70s and the 80s, before you had like cross-stitch designers on, you know, an individual basis where they had their own companies formed and distributors and all of that. So I think that you're right. I think dimensions is probably the gold standard for starting people to out in the cross-stitch field in their hobby. So.
Yeah, we used to have a place called Lee Ward's. I don't know how.
Yes.
Oh, you know that one. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's because that's where I would go and pour through the dimensions kits and come home with a couple of them. And I remember opening them up and you get to sort out all the yarn and, you know, because that was wool, needlepoint wool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
And sort it all out and get it all ready to go. I remember that was almost as much fun as doing the stitching.
Yeah. Well, and those are the kits that appear in, like, generalized craft stores. So those are the things that you would find if you weren't already doing this sort of work, whereas if you go into a specialized needlework shop, that's when you'll find, I think, the sort of the higher end kits that are a little bit more expensive point of entry, but also more complicated and perhaps a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah, do they even make dimension kits anymore? I don't buy kits. I don't buy kits just in rules in general. They still do.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm.
Huh. Wow, that's a long time then.
That is.
I mean, you know, that's a lot of years they've been doing those. Yep.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to go look. Maybe I'll just go look. I don't even know where I'd look for around here anymore. I just have never, but you know, they always had, it was always quality stuff. And like you said, yeah, the directions, everything was good to go. Yep.
Right. From start to finish. They have them at Joann's.
Yes, Michael's.
Michael's.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
We have A.C. Moore here. I mean, I don't know how many of these stores are national, but A.C. Moore here has them also. So any of the larger craft stores, even places like that are more art leaning, like Pearl Paint, which is a big New York City company and online, they'll have them as well. So, yeah, they're pretty ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
Well, might be worth checking out just for fun, just to see how much they've changed. I don't think I'll buy one though. I got away from kits. I liked knowing that when I started, I would have more thread than I needed because I always felt constrained. I just felt like I had to be so careful with a kit so I wouldn't run out of thread.
Right.
And that always made me nervous. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I got to get this question answered because ever since I saw it. So tell me how you're hanging those threads in that big plastic bin.
Well, I have a tutorial on my blog.
Of course you do. So that was a gentle way of saying if you pay attention, you'd know. Okay, got it.
And it explains it all out in there for anybody that's wanting to listen, Gary. You can go and look it up on my blog.
But, okay. No, that's okay. I got it. I got the message. I'll look.
Essentially what it is they're plastic file boxes from like office. I got them at Office Depot. And I took hanging file folders and I measured off about a 2-inch space from the metal hanger part at the top, and I cut them, and then I punched holes in them, and about, you know, like 18, 20 holes down the length of the top of the file folder, so the folder part was gone, and I just had these hangers with holes in the 2-inch below all along the length, and I use ring clips. And I put them by company. So I have one for Weeks Dye Works, Classic Color Works, and Gentle Arts. And I put them in there alphabetically or by ABC order so that if a pattern calls for Gentle Arts Cherry Cobbler, I can go to the C's and quickly find Cherry Cobbler in my Gentle Arts file box. So that's what they are. They're all my over-dyed company specialty threads in boxes by the companies in ABC order.
And just using standard hanging file folder, basically the metal rod and 2 inches worth of the folder itself.
That's right.
That's very slick. Very slick.
It is.
Thank you. I came up with that on my own, as a matter of fact.
It is such a smart idea.
I just used to have my threads lying in a drawer, and they would get tangled, and I never knew what I had, and I would get frustrated. And so about 2 years ago, I decided I've got to come up with something that makes this, you know, better. And I talked to my husband about getting a pegboard and hanging it on the wall, and you know how they do that at like needlework shops.
Right.
And then I thought, well, you know, that where I work at or where I have all my stash is down in our unfinished basement, and our cats live down here in the nighttime. We put them down here in the bachelor pad. And I thought, you know, that it's pretty bright down here because it's in the basement, but it's only in the earth, three sides. So the back is open to the, you know, the world. And it gets pretty light by those windows, and I didn't want my threads to, you know, fade or anything. So I came up with this idea when I saw the boxes on clearance at Office Depot on a January, and they were for $2. And I thought, I can make this work somehow. And I started just walking the aisles, and I saw those file folders, and I thought, I can do cut those off and punch holes. And it all came together. It works really good. It's probably the only thing that I would do different if I was going to do it over is I would get a file cabinet and do it that way. But other than that, it is a pretty slick deal. I really like it.
Yeah, well, see, for me, it addresses the two things that bother me about storing thread. And, I mean, the stores don't have a choice. They have to have it out. But it's the potential for it to fade over long-term storage.
Right.
And then for dust to get on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that keeps it all, and it keeps it clean. And, you know, like I said, you can just see it right through there. I have, I bought those round circle tags and vinyl letters, and I put the ABCs on those so I can just go look on the side in through the clear box and see the letter. Like if I needed a poblano pepper from Classic Color Works, I would go to the P's and then just scan that. I will say I started out with them alphabetized, and I soon quickly forgot about alphabetizing them. So they're just in the P's are all together and the A's are all together and so on. So, but it does work very well.
Yeah, that's neat. Cause see, I have to tell the story of my thread storage. We have friends who bought a house here a couple years ago, and it's a fairly large house. And the previous owner was a gun collector, and he had an official gun room, humid, you know, proper humidity, you know, wood racks, the whole bit. And of course, the people that our friends who bought it, they had no interest in guns, so they had he has this really nice little room that would make a great stitching room, but he's not into stitching, so it's not going to happen. But but so we were over there and we're getting a tour of the house. They'd only been in a few months, and he's and then I got this gun room. I don't know what I'm going to do with this gun room, but I have it. And then he says, and I've got these tool chest drawer, tool chest boxes, and they were they're heavy duty metal. I mean, they're very expensive, and the rollers are so smooth and everything. He says, do you guys want these? And it was six of us together, and us three guys were touring the gun, the gun room, and do you want these? And the other friend said, no, I got no interest. And I said, really, you want to give those away? Because they're not cheap boxes. Yeah, he said, I don't want them. Get them out of here. And I said, well, yeah, I'll take them. He said, what are you going to use them for? I said, you're going to laugh at me. But I said, I'm storing thread in these things.
So a little different.
Yeah, so I lined them with acid-free paper and stored the threads. But I've quickly come to the point where you were at, Vonna, where I've got all these threads in drawers. And every time I'm looking for threads, I have to basically pull out all the pearl number fives or pearl number eights and line them up on the table and find what I want. And it's not a good system. Yours is much better. Yeah.
Well, thank you. It works really well.
Yeah. And cheap. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So cross stitch, do you do mostly from what I've seen at first, your blog, I've been following your blog forever. And I just really enjoy, watching your family, watching your kids grow and your stitching efforts. And I love your, 25 days of Christmas that you do.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Christine, so there's something every day.
Yes. Leading up
to Christmas. Oh, you look. So, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think that's great. I always look forward to that at Christmas as we count down the days and what you have to offer each time. Cause it's really well done. So I enjoy that. But you do mostly smaller cross stitch pieces, is that right? Or you just don't share the big ones very often?
I do a mix. I don't do, like large. I don't do heaven and earth designs. I tried to start one of those. Jane Wooster Scott has a lot. They have a lot of hers in heaven and earth, and I tried to do a Jane Wooster Scott painting and got about probably 1,000 stitches in and thought, I'm going to die before this is ever.
Well, those things are so scary.
it was not for me. That was not for me. So I don't do that size of projects. I've done lots of, I would say medium size. I've got, there's only so many walls in your house that you can hang stuff on. That's why I really got into finishing. But I have, like I said, I'm a model stitcher for Little House. So I have a lot of her things that instead of, paying me money, after she takes the photos for her patterns and stuff, she gives them back to me. So one of the largest projects that I have ever stitched personally was her quilting bee. I can't think of what the name of it is, but it's the quilting bee piece, and that's about 30 by 30. And it's a big square project, and, there's a lot of negative space in there. That's a large project. I also did Little House's family sampler, and that's a very stitch-dense, large, it's probably, I'd say 2.5 by 3. And, it's very, it's one of my favorite pieces. It hangs in my living room. I've done some reproduction schoolgirl samplers, a couple of those by With Thy Needle and Thread, Brenda Jervis. I have done, some of the Good Huswife. She was really hot in the 80s. She's since retired and got married and moved to Europe. And so her patterns are like really hard to find, but I was lucky. I've been cross stitching for so long, I have quite a collection of hers, and I've done a couple of her reproductions. So I don't do large projects all the time. I try to have some on the go. I'm going to currently start a Mirabilia, the Lady of the Flag, if you know any of hers. I got that pattern gifted to me recently, and I picked out the fabric, and I've got all the fiber and the beads together, and I'm really excited about doing that.
Those are, for bigger, more involved things, those are really impressive. I've seen a couple of those done. They're very beautiful.
Yes, and I didn't realize, you know, when you look at the pattern, picture on the pattern of Mirabilia's, you know, it never really struck me. And not until FlossTube, when there's a lot of people on FlossTube that do Mirabilia's, and when I started watching FlossTube about a year and a half ago, I was like, look at that. I couldn't believe how beautiful they are, because the pictures certainly do not show that on the patterns themselves. Okay. So I've kind of fallen in kind of head over heels for Mirabilia here recently. I haven't really done any yet, but I've kind of fallen head over heels for them. So I'm anxious to kind of start that. That will be a huge project. And, but you're right, Gary, a large portion of my stitching life is smalls, particularly ornaments. That is, I every Christmas when we, I have two trees that we put up. One is a Prairie Schooler Santa tree, and it only has Prairie Schooler Santas on it that I've stitched all myself. And there's a few from my friends that knew I was working towards a Santa tree. And but our family Christmas tree holds only handmade ornaments, and they probably have about 500 ornaments on our main family tree, and 275 of those were hand stitched by me. So I really love Christmas, and I really love making ornaments, and every year that's like the gift that keeps on giving, because every year when I hang up my tree, every ornament on that tree, I can remember when I stitched it, what went on that year, and it's just like opening a scrapbook of memories every time I put up my Christmas tree. So that's why I do it. I'm addicted to ornament stitching, and that is true. I try to stitch an ornament a month, and most years I make about 12 to 20 ornaments every year. So wow. I love it.
And such a good idea, though, you know, being able to tag a moment in time with a physical object like that, and then for every year to be able to relive that. That's such a great idea.
It is, and I do one for my my children every year, and my idea on that is, you know, my eldest is 19, and my idea on that is when they leave or when they get married, at their bridal shower, whether it be my daughter's or my son's, every ornament that I've stitched for them, I will have in a box and give to them at their bridal showers. So, that's my plan, so that when they're adults and they leave our home, those ornaments that hung on our tree from the time they were born until the time they live will then be on their tree. So, that's what my plan is. I hope that it all works out like I have in my head, and I think it will, because, like I said, I've got them all. Every year I stitch one for each one of them. And like this year, the ones I did for my boys, they got their driver's license this year. So I did a little, like a 1960s car for my eldest twin. And then the younger twin, he got a truck. And it was a 3D, like a bottle brush, tiny tree that I connected on the roof of the car and then put in the bed of the truck, and it turned out so cute this year for them. So I try to do things that represent the year that, you know, something that happened to them that year. So it really is like a box full of memories every year. So
that's just great. Your kids have any interest in stitching, or is that just the crazy thing mom does?
Well, they think I'm crazy, that's for certain. my oldest, Katie, she stitched when she was about 11 years old. I got her started out with a very simple project. I think it was probably a dimensions kit, a small kid's dimensions kit. And she finished it, and we put it in a frame and got all, I thought, oh, yes, I've got a stitching partner. And I said, oh, let's go pick out your next one. And we were in the store, and she got as far as the store, and we were looking at things to stitch. And she looked at me and said, Mom, and I go, yeah. And she goes, I don't like to stitch. And I said, okay, I'm sorry, honey, if you don't have to stitch, if you don't want to stitch. So she's already told me no, don't get me involved with that. And my littlest girl, Ellie, she's now 11. And when she was 10 years old, she's in 4-H. And she decided that she wanted to do a cross stitch for needle arts for her fair 2 years ago. So she stitched a very simple design, and we framed it. And the next year, when we got ready to sign up for our 4-H, you know, project for the next year, I said, oh, well, we'll have to put cross stitch down because you did really good on cross stitch last year. She got a blue ribbon, and her stitching was beautiful, and she took right to it. And she looked at me and said, Mom, I don't like to stitch. So I struck out twice there. So, no, I'm the only one that stitches, and that's perfectly fine. I figure maybe later in life they might be more interested in it, maybe. I don't know. My Ellie's a she's very good at art. She's a very very talented in drawing. So that's kind of her deal. And I'm hoping that Katie might turn the corner once she gets out of college. We'll see.
I think the trick is you have to pretend that you don't care. You have to treat them like cats, right?
Yeah.
Pretend that you don't care and tell them that you don't want them to do it.
Yeah.
And then, right, if you go, oh, no, I really don't want you to do this. This is not for you. Then that's the best way I've found.
Maybe I need to try that. I haven't
right?
tried that.
No, just don't come in my yarn. Don't look at my yarn. That's not for you. You can't have it.
Well, try it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my kids just think I'm nuts, but whatever. Yeah. So, and the other thing I wanted to ask you, when you stitch all of these charts, is it your tendency to just stick with the colors that are spec'd, or are you one who's frequently changing colors and doing variations?
You know, I do both. When over-dyed threads came out, 10, 15 years ago, I was very suspicious of those. I thought, that's not any good. Those things are too expensive. Who would want to use something like that? And it only took one project for me to stitch those. And I realized that, these are kind of nice. So it depends on what kind of look I'm going for. But I hear lately I have done a lot of conversions from DMC to like a special, like a Gentle Arts or a Classic Color Works or a Weeks Dye Works to get that mottled effect, particularly if the color is mottled. I tend to go for that. If it's a straight color like a DMC, I don't find there's any use to change it. But I do like that mottled kind of old-fashioned muted look that over-dyed cottons give. And I think it depends on the project, but if it's a large piece, a lot of times I will switch it if it's not called for. But, it seems like the designers, particularly the ones I stitch, a lot of them are just right away are using the over-dyes. So I'm not above changing, and I have been known to change, but I don't do it every time. So.
Yeah, those over-dyes certainly open a lot of doors. They really.
They certainly do.
Yeah. Silk or cotton? Don't care.
I don't know. I might get in trouble here, but I don't really like silk at all, to be honest with you.
Oh, I can't believe it.
And I don't know.
That's blasphemous.
You just said the happiest, right? Because weren't we just talking about how you don't like rayon? And
yeah.
Because it's slippery, so.
That's kind of the way I know that, they say it slips right through the fabric, and I've heard people say that, and I just can tell you that I think I like cottons. I don't know what it is about it. Yes, they're soft, and yes, they're beautiful. But to me, cotton's where it's at. So that's I just stick with cottons. I'm not a silk person at all.
Yeah, just curious, just curious. I mean, I'll do either one, as long as it's not rayon. So. but well, Debbie, you know, Debbie Raleigh in our last podcast gave tips on how to deal with rayon, so I'm gonna try again.
I have to say, so now I'm you know, intrigued by this because I haven't done any kind of embroidery or cross stitch in decades. But when you're talking about how the silk goes through the fabric, I have such a vivid sort of sensory memory of exactly what the cotton thread feels like going through both, you know, embroidery, going through, like needlepoint canvas and also going through cross stitch fabric. It's such it's very specific feel. Mm-hmm. So I can totally, it's like such a vivid memory of being such a tiny person and just exactly what that feels like. So I can appreciate why you would want to stick with with that, because it almost becomes, when you're stitching, it's that comfort of that's what you're doing, and that feel becomes so associated with that comfortable, everything is well in the house kind of feeling. So to switch to something else that's not only feels different, but is, you know, sort of an ornery thread to work with, I could understand and appreciate the resistance. But on the other hand, I can also appreciate the fact that you do get such different types of effects doing it that way.
Mm-hmm. It's almost meditative to me.
Correct. Exactly.
There's a sound to it. There's a feel to it. I always tell people, you know, that stitching to me is my cow gone moment.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
you know, because when I was growing up, they go to Calgon, have a Calgon moment. And, you know, I had 3 children under the age of 2 at one time, and I never quit stitching because that was my sanity. That was my Calgon moment. And I, you know, my husband, if I'm grumpy, he'll say, "Have you stitched today?" You know. so that there is very rarely a day that goes by that I do not stitch at least, you know, an hour. I love it that much. It's just that much a part of my life. And I know that many, many people feel that way. And, you know, when we got married, I dabbled in a lot of things. And I tell this to people, and they're, you know, it almost like offends people when I say this. But my husband, when we got married, we were moving into our new home. And he was carrying in box after box after box. And he'd go, "What is this?" And I go, "Oh, that's scrapbooking. What is this? Oh, that's crochet. What is this? Oh, that's cross stitch. What is this? Quilting," you know, and all this stuff. And he finally said, "This is ridiculous. You have to pick, you have to pick one craft." And, so I thought about it. You know, we were just married. I didn't want to get divorced.
Vonna, you do realize that's a complete reversal of what's normal. Because normally it's the husband dragging all kinds of garbage into the house, furniture that's beat up, you know, and this has got to go,
I don't know, Gary. You haven't seen my basement.
Oh, okay.
So I had to think long and hard. It didn't take me very long because I was in love with stitching even then. And, I pick stitching and I never look back, and that's really, that is truly the only thing I do. And I'm glad I wouldn't have known in 1995 that I would have been so deeply involved in stitching as what I am today. And with my yes to stitching then, I've come all this way, and I feel, and I mean, it's good. I'm glad. I love this hobby. And, I'm glad that he kind of put me to the fire there and made me choose, I guess.
I just have this mental image of your husband herding up the kids and saying, "Come on, kids, we got to go outside. Mama's got to stitch, or we won't be able to live with her the rest of the day."
He would do that. As a matter of fact, he would come home from work when they were little, particularly the first 3, when they were little. He would come home from work, and we would have supper, And he would get them in a wagon, and he would say, you stay and stitch. And that's what I would do. I would stitch, and he would take them for a wagon ride for an hour. So that was a large part of our family family time in the evening. Is Mommy would have a little time, and he would have some time with the kids. And that was good for them, and it was good for me, too. So it worked out.
That's great. That's great. So we just redid our family room here in the past year. And I carved out a corner and was able to get, I went to IKEA and found my, actually my wife found it, a big table with a shelf end. And then I have those two gun cabinet things. And so for the first time, I have a chair with my gun cabinets full of thread. That's funny. And a big table and a floor stand. And a comfortable office chair, and I can sit there and watch TV and stitch. And it's just been a game changer because, you know, I have space to work, a big table, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And when I look at your videos, as much mm-hmm. as I like mine, you sure look to have a really nice big space to do all of your work. A big table, you got sewing mm-hmm. machine on its own table, and it looks like you really have a nice setup.
This is what you're speaking about is where I do my finishing mostly. And you're right. I do have a lot. It's lovely. It's a wonderful space. It's a little cold in the wintertime because, it's in an unfinished basement and we live in Indiana. So it's a little cool, but, my husband bought me a space heater last Christmas. So that makes it a little bit warmer in the winter. And it's a little hot in the summer because it truly is unfinished. We don't have air vents that come down here. Everything in here is repurposed. We didn't buy anything new except for the long white table. We bought that at Sam's. And, I have used, you know, I guess, what do you say? Repurpose, recycle, reuse. I have done that here in the basement and it has really worked out wonderfully. I do have a big space and I can store all my fabrics for finishing and my ribbons. And then my stash is down here with me too. So, I did a video on that on FlossTube and I called it like my own needle workshop and it is like my own needle workshop. And I'm down here every day because I'm finishing full time now. And, I'm down here every day with the things that I love best. And I was just thinking, last week, boy, I've got the best of both worlds. I don't have to go outside and drive somewhere to go to work. I just, you know, put on my jogging pants and come downstairs essentially within my house shoes. So, I'm doing what I love and, I'm making a little bit of money to help my husband support our family. So, it's really, cross stitch has really become, you know, a very integral part of my life and, I'm happy and I like it and I love it and I want to promote it and share it with other people. So, that's why I'm in all of the things that I'm, you know, blogging and, floss tubing and Instagramming. And I just love it. I just can't tell you how much I love cross stitch and the people that are involved in it and the whole community because it is a community. So.
Yeah, and you do a terrific job with those videos. That's every one that I've watched, I really feel at the end like I could do that. A lot of times you see those videos and you get done and you go, boy, I just don't know if I can handle it. But you do an excellent job of explaining and showing and taking your time to show each step thoroughly, and it really does work out well, and you obviously it's well lit, so I'm not looking in shadows trying to see what's going on, and I think you do a really good job of showing that, and like I said, I do want to learn how to finish, especially ornaments, and I've watched more than one of yours to try and get a sense of how to do it, and you do it. It's just really nice, really good job, and for someone who actually does finishing as a business, to share the techniques and secrets is really admirable.
Thank you.
Yeah, clearly you want to go beyond just making money. You want others to succeed, and that's great.
I feel very strongly that I was put on this earth for a reason. And I think part of the reason that I was put on this earth was to be a servant. a servant to others and to share and to love one another and be a friend and a helpmate. And I, you know, finishing, there is no secrets to finishing. I mean, there's secrets, but anybody can do it. What I tell everybody is finishing, the number one component of finishing is time. You think about how much time it takes you just to stitch a small ornament. Think how much time it takes you to do that. And you can't expect to sit down and slob something together in 10 or 15 minutes. And
that's true.
Great, you know, mm-hmm. it takes time. And that's what I'm trying to share with people is that you have to have the tools to do it, first of all. And then second of all, you have to take the time. To take the time to do it. It's an art. And you want to, you know, if you spend all that money on linen, you know, linen is expensive and the threads. And if you get the specialty threads, that's even more expense and buying the pattern. And then the time that it takes to stitch it, you want to give that credit. You want to make that piece shine and be beautiful. And so that's what I want to share with the world or with anybody that wants to know is that you can do that. And I can equip you to do that. And if you can't do it, well, then you can send it to me and I'll be happy to do it for you.
And that's true. And all of those things are true. And I think sometimes what happens with people is that the excitement of a piece comes at the beginning when you're mm-hmm. starting it and you're ambitious and it's new and the novelty is there. And so you get into it. And then by the time you're done actually stitching or in my case, quilting the top, the rest of it is a lot less exciting of a job. Mm-hmm. And you're bored of it at that time. You know, by mm-hmm. that time you've been looking at it for, you know, months sometimes or longer. And the last thing you want to do is look. So you get it. You get to that part. That's the not exciting part, just at the point where you've really at the stretch of your interest of the piece. So the idea of being able to have someone else just finish off that piece, and for you, you're looking at it for the first time, so it's not going to be, you know, you don't have quite the I can't stand looking at this anymore feeling at that point. So it is kind of nice, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, of course, the alternate is to put it down, do another project, and then come back to it. But then how many of those projects do you end up with that are just, you know, 98% of the way there and mm-hmm. aren't finished? So, mm-hmm. I think that's good.
Right. And I think that there's just some people that don't like the whole they like the process of stitching. They
don't
like the process of finishing.
True.
And I like finishing. You have to like it because it's not a fast process. I work, most days I work 7 to 8 hours every day. Even on the weekends, a lot of times I'm down finishing because my business has become so popular that I got to keep ahead. I'm trying to catch up. And, it takes a lot of time to do one piece. You know, I mean, it really does. On my best days, I can maybe get 6 pieces done. And if they're large, intricately sewn, like quilted wall hangings or something like that, it takes me all day to do one piece. And, some people just don't want to do that. They just don't want to spend that kind of time on it. All they want to do is the stitching. And they want somebody else to do it. And I'm not the only finisher in the world. There's lots of finishers in the world. And everybody has a look and a different, strength, I believe, to their finishing. And so, it's good. That's a good option for people that don't like that process of finishing. So that's a good thing. It's just like a framer. I mean, a finisher is like a framer. It's just you're not going to get a frame. You're getting something else. So,
I remember when, I don't remember how long ago it was, but I remember when you decided to quit your full-time job and start doing this. And mm-hmm. I mean, that was a real change, at least in what I read on your blog, a real life-changing moment. Was that quite a leap of faith there to say, I'm walking away from this and I'm going to do finishing full-time? Or were you at a point where you just, that's what it had to do?
I was kind of at a point where that's what I had to do. I'm a microbiologist by trade. I went to school 5 years. I have a master's degree, and I worked in the healthcare field in a laboratory, a medical laboratory in a hospital, and I did that for 25 years, and I was good at it, but I never worked full-time at it because we had a large family, and it was important to us as a family for our kids not to be in daycare. And plus, it wasn't very cost effective. With the first three, they would have all been in daycare, you know, at the same time, and that wouldn't have been cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a blessing that I worked in the healthcare field because my husband's an electrical engineer, so there was no option. He had to work Monday through Friday, regular working hours, but I could work the off hours, in evenings and on weekends. And so that's what I did. All the way up to when Ellie was born 11 years ago, I worked every other weekend and on evening shift, which was they let me come in at 5 o'clock when my husband got home, and I worked until 11:30 or 12. And I did that on a part-time basis. It wasn't full-time, and it was okay, but I didn't get into a lot of sleep on the nights that I was
Yes, exactly.
And I never really had, you know, a lot of good things happen on the weekends, and I would miss out on that. And, of course, you know, being a healthcare worker, you don't have holidays off either. And this summer I worked in an environment, you know, healthcare has just gotten kind of rough. They're cutting, you know, they're not getting reimbursements like they used to get. So they cut the workforce, and they're expecting people to do more and more and more work. And I worked as a PR. Well, I worked as a part-time person, and they cut me down to PRN. So I had no benefits, no vacation pay, no holiday pay, nothing. But yet I was still required to fill in when the full-time people were sick or on vacation, you know, at a moment's notice. And I kind of got tired of that. I got tired of kind of always getting my hands cut, you know, slapped, and not getting benefit that the other people got or a part-time person got, and so I quit. And so it was a leap of faith. I live in Bloomington, Indiana, and it's not a booming metropolis, and it seems like in the environment of healthcare right now, this could change at any time, but right now, it seems like, especially for laboratory work, they're going to centralized labs in large cities. And the largest city to us is Indianapolis, and it's about an hour away. And I don't want to have to drive an hour to and from work. That's 2 hours a day commute. I don't want to do that. And so we sat down as a family and decided that I think I could make a go of it with this finishing business and just really try to grow it, and I didn't have to try very hard, and you know, the Lord provides. That's all I have to say. And I've gotten a lot of business. I had a lot of business before, but I've really gotten a lot of business here recently, and it's all worked out. I've effectively kind of put myself in early retirement, which I regret because I had to work really hard to get myself through college, but in the best way that I can think of it for our family right now, at this point in our lives, what I'm doing is what's best for us. So it's all worked out, and I'm happy with where I'm at in life and with the decision that I made. I just did that this summer. I my last day was July 31st. Sorry. July 31st was my last day working in the hospital, and I don't regret it. Not one bit. So.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, my wife and I work at home, and I have to say the commute is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, you can both stop talking because
yeah,
I commute more than an hour.
Yeah, Christine's
more
got
than an hour.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Long Island commute there. Yeah.
I have a Long Island commute, and emphasis on long.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay, so you were already finishing, so to do it full time, it really was just a matter of devoting more time to it. You had all the gear you needed,
mm-hmm.
you had the space, the whole bit. So
yep.
you were able to just quit your job, and that time became
and just
finishing time.
That's right. And because I was doing it every day anyways, because I was just at the point when I quit, I was just working every other weekend. They had cut my hours down so much that I was just working 4 days a month. And when you think about that, you know, I had started out working basically a part-time job where I was working 3 or 4 days a week, and they cut me down to just 4 days a month. And then, I'll be honest with you, one of the people that I worked with was very difficult, and I had more stress thinking about going to work than I needed to have, and for it wasn't worth it for the money that I was making.
Well, four days a month is just hassle.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, I haven't, they had cut me down so far, and it was because I didn't want to work full time. And, so it really didn't make the decision that difficult. And I have recouped, you know, what I lost by quitting that job. I've recouped everything in my business here at home, and it's worked out great. So
that's terrific when you can do that. That's just fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
You brought me back at the video I watched last night. You were finishing a little pillow, ornament, and, and I was watching you cut. And it brought me back to, I'm a magazine editor. Been doing it for 35 years. So I started back in the typewriter days and key lining with a camera ready copy that you had to cut with an X-Acto blade and a T-square and those kinds of things. And one of the first things I learned doing that, you know, one of the wizened veterans taught me, is always put your straight edge on the part that you want to keep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the X-Acto knife doesn't wander into what you really want.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were cutting, I applauded you because you put your straight edge, you were cutting off XX fabric with your rotary cutter, and by golly, you put the straight edge right over the ornament stuff so that that wouldn't happen. So I was going, yes, it still applies.
Yes, that is true.
Yep. And then, now you have, looks like a really nice sewing machine. Is that a pretty basic unit, or?
It is a Janome Magnolia. I think it's a 7660 or a 7330. I don't know. It's a Magnolia Janome series, and it is, it's electronic and computerized, but it's just the basic, very entry level of that. So it's about a $400 machine.
Okay.
It's 8 years old. I make sure that I maintain it. You can't blow air into it or anything like that. You can't oil it yourself. It has to be taken to the dealer, and they maintain it every year. And I make sure that I take it in for its annual maintenance. And it has never given me a moment's problem at all. I've sold a lot of them, as a matter of fact. It is a fabulous machine. I highly recommend it. It, like I said, it was about $400, but you know, to get a nice one, a Singer at Joann's.
It's not a bad price at all.
No, And this is, it's just fabulous. It's a fabulous machine. It has everything on there that a general, you know, for what I need it for, just general sewing, it has everything on there that you could ever need. And it's fabulous. So. Highly recommend it.
Okay, she just sold four more. She wants her commission.
It's true, right? Unless you're doing embroidery or doing like long arm quilting where you need something, you know, different, or you're doing something where you need a serger. Maybe it's just, you know, the way that I learned from my grandmother, who, you know, taught me on an old Singer, and then I had an old Singer for probably 20 years. There's very little you can't do with forward and backward, and
that's
the
right.
ability to adjust the length of the stitch.
Yep.
Beyond that, I think, you know, I have a computerized, you know, moderately computerized machine, and I don't think I've ever used any of those things except the first day where I said, ooh, I can sew up a pattern of leaves. And then after I did that, I never did it again. So,
zigzag, straight and backwards. There you go. That's all you need.
Pretty much, right? That's it. And if it's, easy to thread, that's really, you know, nice. And beyond that, that's really it. I think a lot of that is just, it becomes gimmicky, and maybe I'm just, you know, when I was young, actually, I worked for a time sewing, I don't even know how to explain it, but, medical devices. So, things that would, so it's crazy. So I worked for a company that made artificial legs. And so legs have to be held on to your body somehow. So there was a lot of straps and things like that. So I did, you know, medical corsets and things like that. So then I was working on a big industrial machine. And the only thing that had benefit over a home machine was because it was built into a table, your foot, instead of lifting it with your finger, you could lift it with your knee.
Oh.
So you were able to move faster because you were controlling that without having to lift your hand from your work.
I see.
Aside from that, and that was 30 years ago, forward, backward, and zigzag, I'm pretty much hooked on those. If you can do those things reliably and your thread doesn't get caught and you don't have tension issues, I don't see that, you know, I don't find any need to do anything more than that.
Yeah, I don't either. And I mean, I'm not a very, everything I've learned on a sewing machine, I've taught myself.
Right, right.
So I agree with you. I don't think it's just all bells and whistles and things that can go wrong.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like a buttonholer is nice, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of the different, you know, feet are nice if you're doing, you know, zippers and stuff like that. But aside from that, basic machines. And I think people get intimidated that, you know, a lot of the equipment is expensive, but you can buy things relatively inexpensively. And used machines are not always a terrible idea because there are lots of people that think, oh, I'm going to start sewing, or any kind of hobby, you know, and then they try it and they give up really easily and then they just want to get rid of it. So a lot of times you can get a machine, you know, really inexpensively. And that's great for kids, I think, because otherwise it can be very expensive to get involved, but a kid can use a used machine that's in good shape and get, you know, started and there you go. I mean, sometimes that's all it takes is just lowering the price of entry.
That's right.
Okay. One more thing. We got to end.
Okay.
The video I watched last night, you were stuffing the ornament and the lofting.
Yes.
The lofting technique. So talk about that because I was amazed in that little ornament, how much polyfiber fill you got into that thing.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, and I that is the number one thing that people will email me about. Like, what do you mean lofting? What is that? And I always say, take a cotton ball, and this is how you can visually do it. Just take a cotton ball from your bathroom and start pulling tiny parts of that cotton ball apart and lay it on your countertop, and then take that a new cotton ball and lay it beside it and see how much more volume that is between those two things. One, a cotton ball picked apart and a cotton ball that's put together. And it works the same way with fiber fill. I learned that about 5 years ago when I was finishing, and I realized, you know, my corners were, they wouldn't ever, I'm very particular about corners and making sure everything lines up, and I want to be perfect. You know, if somebody's paying me to finish, or if I'm doing my own finishing, I want it to be perfect. I want it to be beautiful. And I was never pleased with how my ornaments looked. And so I started buying this one particular brand of fiber fill, which is Mountain Mist. And it has it's not as slicky, I guess, is the slick or, that's the best word I can think, slick.
No, that's a good word. Right.
Yeah. As other brands, it's more cottony like. And so it has some substance to it. And when you pick that apart and then stuff it in there and you just stuff with your chopstick into the corner and just work it and work it and work it. Like I show in my video, it makes a tremendous difference, and you can see it you can see the evolution of finishing on my Christmas tree. And I know that sounds crazy.
No, I was going to ask about that because I was afraid to ask you. Actually, you must have gotten a lot better over the years, and it's got to show.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. If you just go through my Flickr albums, you can see the evolution of my finishing. honestly, I'm being serious. I've learned a lot of wonderful things. I mean, you know, experience, you know, teaches you everything in life, and you got to be open to it. And you have to admit that, man, maybe that wasn't so great when I did that 8 years ago. But, you know, the two most important things that I've learned is keep your corners really packed tight, lofting your polyfill, and don't have so much negative space on your finishes. Keep it close to the design, and don't have like big wide open areas of fabric or complementary fabric. You want to keep them tight. If you keep your finishing tight to the design, it looks so much better. I mean, I need to do a video on that to show the difference between, you know, I see it all the time online on pictures where you have like people that do wall hangings or something like that, and they have all this, you know, this busy material around the stitch design, and your eye gets lost in the material around the stitching, and you kind of ignore the stitching. If you keep that tight to the stitching, that draws your eye right to the stitching. And so that's what my job as a finisher is you want your eye drawn immediately to the stitching, and your finishing should complement it and enhance what the stitching is. And I feel like, I'm not going to say I'm perfect at that every time, but I feel like I have a real eye, a real talent for that, to draw, to appeal to a wide range of people. And that's the two things. Keep it tight to the design and loft that fiberfill. Till you, and then just stuff. Just keep on stuffing into the ornaments or your pillows or whatever.
and you sure do stuff and work that stuff in.
I do. I go through fiberfill. The UPS man always like says to me, "Did you buy some more fiberfill?" Because there is like a refrigerator sized box when it goes on sale on Joann's. I don't go to Joann's, because I can get the larger bags from Joann's online. And so until I have like a 20% off coupon off your total purchase, and it's already on sale, and I'll buy like 10 bags of this fiberfill, and it comes like in a refrigerator size box. and my UPS man knows that that's what it is. He goes, "Did you buy more fiberfill? Because I have to get, I should take out stock in fiberfill, because I probably go through, I would say, 40 pounds of fiberfill a year."
That's a lot of fiberfill.
That's a lot of fiberfill, that is.
All right, we got to wrap up. Now, you've given us an hour of great conversation, so tell people how they get a hold of you so that they can learn from you and or use you as a finisher.
Okay. On my blog, it is The Twisted Stitcher. If you just Google The Twisted Stitcher, I'm the number one hit. If you just Google my name, Vonna, I'm the number one hit on Google. I've been Googled that many times, I guess. Anyway, I'm the number one hit. I have a written blog that just displays my own stitching. I have a tutorial written blog that is called Learn to Finish with the Twisted Stitcher, and it's all pictures and written word on that blog. And I have a YouTube channel, which is just my name, Bonna Pfeiffer, and I have Floss Tube Updates, which is my own personal stitching, and also video tutorials there. So, and I'm on Instagram too, at Bonna Pfeiffer on Instagram. So I am all over the place, and I welcome anybody to come and check me out and start stitching. That's what I'm here all about. I love stitching, and join me. I have fun talking it to anybody.
Okay, that did
Excellent.
It right there.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Vonna. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary, and it's nice to meet both of you. Christine, it was nice to meet you. And, Gary, thank you so much for asking me.
You bet. Really enjoyed it. Thanks. All right.
Thank you.
That's it for Fiber Talk this week. We'll be back with another guest next week. Thanks. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, and we play with needles.
Yes, we do.
And this week, she's twisted, she's a stitcher, and she's back with us. Vonna Pfeiffer. Hi, Vonna.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Welcome.
Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you. Well, it was an honor. I was just so shocked when you asked me back.
Well, we have things to talk about.
Yes, we do.
I always have lots to talk about.
Yeah, we have things to talk about, and we know you can talk for hours, so we're good to go.
Well, so many questions. So we've been talking about, well, and Gary was just saying, you know, now we have questions on so how exactly did you do this? So it might be a good thing to do this time to do some of those things, you know, talk about the nitty-gritty of particular troubleshooting things.
I'm happy to talk about whatever you want to talk about.
So the video that you did where you just stitched outside with the wind chimes, what kind of response did you get to that?
I've had a lot of positive response about that, which I kind of thought I was going to get a lot of negative response about that because after I did it, I saw that they really couldn't see what I was doing. So I bought a new thing off of Amazon that I think that maybe it might help for the next time. And I've just been too busy to set out there and do it and try it. But I've got a lot of positive responses about that. And it was fun. It was kind of fun to do. And so I'm planning on doing another one, see how my new gadget works. And we'll see. We'll still see how that goes. There's a lot of people on the groups on Facebook that say, they want more videos like that. I'm not the only one that's done it. There's been other floss tubers that have done that. And people say, you know, they like to just, they don't have a stitching buddy. And so that it's fun to just sit and stitch while somebody else is stitching on camera. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun idea too. So.
Yeah. It was fun. I think it also does able to look in and see how you go about things. And I think that helps people a lot. They don't need to talk to you, but just to see how you go about things, see how people with a lot of experience go about their stitching. I think it's helpful to see that. I wouldn't mind if other people did it just to see just how careful they are, how fast they are. I was amazed at how quickly you make X's. You've made a few billion of them, I'm sure. But I look at how fast I stitch, and I'm not a fast stitcher, and you just trot right along, and that was informative to me just to see that.
And you know, that's the one thing that I really why I enjoy those videos is for the very reason that you said is that everybody has their own rhythm and their own way of doing it, and I really enjoy seeing that too. So that's why I did it. And I get asked that a lot. How do you stitch? How fast do you go? And how do you answer that unless, you know, you just have to show them. So right. I believe that is good. That's one of the reasons why I like it too. So.
Yeah. And then, I had never seen anybody stitch, with a scroll frame on a stand like yours, the lap stand you have, but whether it's floor or lap stand. And I saw the real benefits of that because when I use my scroll frame, I'm clamping it down. And, matter of fact, we're recording here on Thursday night. I just got back. A friend of mine helped me take my wood stand and put a new top on it with arms so that I can just rest my scroll frame on there. So it, you know, I could really see how just having that scroll frame loose on the stand so you can just flip it over and flip it back is a real plus. And because, I mean, I'm sitting there loosening and tightening and adjusting every with every thread. And so now I'm looking forward to just having that thing loose, resting on the arms and flipping it over. So that was that was helpful to me. And of course, that lap stand you have, well, that's a beautiful little piece of equipment there.
It was, you know, if you would have told me a year ago that I'd be stitching with a stand like that, I would have told you you were crazy. But when I started using roller frames, and I would have told you you were crazy if you would have said, are you ever going to use a scroll frame? I would have said, you're crazy. No, I'm not ever going to do that, because I was pretty much sold on Q-snaps. But when I started using roller frames, and it was, you know, bulky to hold, and I have, like, wrist issues anyways because of how much hand work I do in finishing and just the sheer amount of cross-stitching that I do. And my doctor makes me wear braces on both my hands every night to keep them immobile, to, like, rest them while I sleep, and so that I don't curl them at night. Well, anyways, I started searching. When I started using roller frames, I started searching for an idea, you know, a stand, because I had a needlework system for stand, and I was sold on that. And but I didn't like their setup for the scroll frames, and you have to use theirs. And I didn't want to use theirs. I wanted to use roller frames. And I saw this wooden stand and just this little man, and I think he's in South Carolina, North Carolina, makes them, and they are economically, you know, they're not very expensive, or I don't feel like they're very expensive. It's a handmade by his hands, and it just really is fat. I just really like it. I can't say enough about it. So, yeah, it's been very beneficial. It's quick. It's nice. I just set it on. I can take it anywhere. And, I do. I do take it everywhere with me. And it's just really nice. That has been a real fabulous thing that I did. I bought it it'll be a year in October that I bought it, and it's just really enhanced my stitching life. So.
So what, can you say the name of the frame that you're using now that you like?
It's just a little old man makes it in South Carolina. And I can give the information to anybody that wants to contact me and do it. I don't want to give it out over, you know, this, because he's just a little old man that makes them. And, I've sold so many of them for him that he sent me a week ago a hand-turned wooden vase that he turned and made himself, and gave me the sweetest note. And it made me cry when I opened it, because his handwriting reminded me of my grandfather, who was also a carpenter. And it's similar to the Judy O'Dell stand. It's Judy O'Dell has a stand, a floor stand, and the look, the arms are similar to hers, but this is just an all-in-one, very compact lap stand, and that he makes, and it's nice. It's very nice. It's made out of red oak, and he varnishes it nicely, and it's just really nice. Very, very good workmanship. So,
well, and it sits there on your lap. I mean, you weren't struggling with it at all. You just sat there, and you were just able to stitch without thinking about it. And so it obviously is well designed and works perfectly for you.
Yes, and it's very ergonomic, and you know, it's thin along the base, so it fits right up next to your belly. And I like my work close to me, and it's just well designed and well fashioned and just great.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought I would have one stand, and now I have two of them. Because I have a Case Creation that I use for needlepoint when I'm on stretcher bars, and that works just fine for that. But then when I try to clamp a scroll frame on there, it's too far out, and I had this other wooden stand before that. And so what I've been doing with the scroll frame is I'll take the clamp from the wooden stand and put it on the other end to support it, and then I'll stitch, mm-hmm. you know, the length of a thread. Then I got to take it all apart to turn it over to start, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. to end it off. So now, so now I have two of them, but now that we've fitted this, the wood one with arms, then now I'll have one that will handle the scroll frame just right. But, these floor stands or lap stands, either one are, just to me are almost essential in many ways. As Christine, I'm sure, sits there right now, all contorted, hanging onto stretcher bars and stitching.
I'm not contorted. I'm coming around to the idea that a lap frame might be the right sort of middle ground for me. So Gary and I have talked about this, where I don't want to sit in a chair, like an upright chair sort of thing. Mm-hmm. To stitch, I like to kind of, you know, sit cross-legged half the time and, mm-hmm. and do all kinds of... So a stand frame wouldn't necessarily work for me because there's no way for me to, you know, it would be too rigid. Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking to do now is to find something that's more of a lap stand that's kind of like what you were working on. Mm-hmm. Because then it's more portable and it's more, you know, I can contort the way that Gary hates. And it works for me.
You can tort any way you want. I don't care. It's not my back and hips. Do whatever you want. Okay, so Lana, now, I was practicing last night. You know, the technique that you use with Thread Heaven and stitching, and when you come back up through the linen or whatever the cloth is, doesn't matter, you come up with the eye and eye of the needle, and it helps you keep, if you're using two strands, you don't have to monkey around with laying tools or railroading. And so describe that technique, because I've been practicing with it, and I have questions for you. And it seems like mm-hmm. I'm having to take a little, make a little extra effort to learn. But as I got done last night, I started to feel like I was getting the hang of it. But tell about that technique that you have, and you have at least one, if not two, videos that show it. But this is mm-hmm. completely your own thing, right?
Well, I believe it is my own thing. I've had a couple of older ladies say that, oh, they were taught that way by their grandmothers or something like that. But I did not have anyone show me that. I came up with it on my own, and it was by sheer accident, kind of probably how fire was discovered is how I discovered it. And how that was because I just hate changing. Before I started doing the pin stitch, I just hated changing threads, and I would work it down to where it was just a nubbins. And I had 1X left of this color, and I couldn't like turn my needle to go down or anything like that. And I thought, well, I'm just going to try to go down with the eye, you know. And I did it that way. And when I did it that way, I went down with the point, and I, you know, down through the cloth with the point, and then up through the cloth with the eye, rather than turning my needle underneath. And when I did that, just on that one stitch, I was like, whoa, that stitch really looks nice. And so then that's how it happened, is I just did it by chance because I didn't want to start a new thread on one stitch. And so then the next row, I got my new thread and I started, and I thought, I'm going to try to do that just to see what it's like. And I played around with it, and I figured out that you never have to dangle your thread, you know, your needle to untwist the thread. The thread never twists. If you never turn your needle, the thread never twists, and you don't have to railroad. You don't have to use a laying tool. And then I started, you know, how could I make it better? And so I started using Thread Heaven, and that made it even better. And because, you know, if you do Thread Heaven and put it on right, where you run it through the Thread Heaven, then you take it and you run your fingernail over it, that creates like a polarity on those individual threads. And they will actually repel each other. So they'll lay side by side when you lay them on, you know, when you stitch with them. And when you use my technique, down with the point, up with the eye, they really lay, they're beautiful. Even white thread lays beautiful. And so I started, you know, experimenting with Thread Heaven. And then I found that and I don't know why or how I started doing this, but I never have like short tails, like my needle down to the end of the thread. I always have long tails, and then as I'm stitching, I'll move my needle down the length of the thread. And the value that I've seen in that over the years is that your thread doesn't wear it as much if you do that. If you're constantly moving your needle down the length of the thread, your thread does not wear, so it won't fuzz. And I found that, and then I found that, you know, when you're putting the needle down or bringing it up in a space that already has threads in that space from, you know, other stitches, that if you keep the tail longer, that you'll have less likelihood to split those threads. Now, why? I don't know. But that's what I have found. And I also complete my X about 97% of the time as I go, whether I'm using over dye threads or DMC. I have found personally that completing my X as I go and using my techniques creates even tension and better X's. So that's my whole technique in a nutshell is, I've experimented. I've stitched like this exclusively probably for 20 years. And now to go back and stitch with the eye down and the eye or the needle point down and then turn and needle point up is like awkward for me. I can't. Mm-hmm. I almost can't do it. So
now, see, all right. So several questions here. Now I'm working on a shepherd's bush stocking, and that's all pearl thread. And so I first started using your technique, and I haven't done cross stitch in quite a while because the last stocking just burnt me out on it. And so I this is the first time that I've done any cross stitching here just in the last 3 or 4 weeks, in a long time. And so with the pearl thread, I started using your technique of the eye up from the bottom and immediately saw the benefit of that because I wasn't having to watch, you know, how pearl will get either too tight or too loose. If you, and quickly, and it starts to look sloppy, and immediately that was not happening. So, it was just single strand pearls, of course. But I immediately got benefit from that in that the twist on the pearl was staying more consistent throughout the X's. So that started to hook me right away because that, I get real tired of watching, to me at least, you gotta watch that pearl thread if you're doing a lot of it really closely because it will get too tight or too loose if you're not careful and then whatever stitch you're doing is kind of all over the road. So that helped me a lot with that. But then I was always one of those that would do, as long a row as I could of a half cross and then come back. And that's just the way I was taught and the way I always did it. And I would sit and map things out so I could do these long strings of half across and then come firing back and complete them. And I thought, well, I'm going to try it your way and I'm just going to make full X's each time. And, I have to say that I agree with you. I'm getting better results. But the other benefit, and I'm with you, I hate starting and ending threads. The more hassle those are, the less I want to stitch. But the other benefit I was getting out of making full crosses was that I had more thread on the back to weave ends into. However I'm doing it, which I think is the way you do it. So I felt like it was easier to end threads because, there was more on the back and I could weave and I could do a Bargello hook. So I'm happier with the way my threads are ending off as a result of that too.
I can tell you that, you know, if people would try it, they would see the benefit of it. And, that's the whole thing. I mean, you just have to prove it to yourself. That's what you've done. And you're right. It does not twist. I mean, I've done pearl cottons, like the Bent Creek, those big, they're like on burlap similar to what, you know, they're those kits. And you're right. the pearl cotton doesn't twist as easily. It lays very nicely. And when you complete your X, it's like uniform. You know, there's like a uniformity in there, and you're right. You do have a way to easily end your threads when you're done. So I sold myself, and I think that I've sold some other people, but you never know, I guess.
Okay. So then last night, then I did a real good practice on the latest, 12 Days of Christmas that are done on Red Gingham. And I don't remember the name of the designer, those ornaments. And.
Oh, so, yeah. Hands-on design, Kathy Haberman.
Yeah, those. Yeah. The coolest ornaments yet for 12 days. Yeah. So, okay. So, but now here's where I was using two strands of DMC on that cloth, which is, I don't know, is it 30 or 40 point, or 40 threads count, whatever. I don't know what it is. Anyway.
If you got the one that is, it's called for, it's 28 count.
That's 28 count. Okay. So yeah, it's fairly fine. So I'm stitching with that. Now when I ran it through that, ran the strands through the thread heaven, and then you said your fingernail, because I was bringing my fingers down the thing twice, and I would get some polarity, but not enough. Is it the fingernail that does it?
I always just put it between, so my pointer finger and my thumb. So my pointer finger, I just laid against the pad, the thread against the pad, and then my thumbnail, I just run it against it. I just run it against the thread. So yeah, I use my, but I think if you would do it with your finger a couple of times, that would work too.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try the nail then. So, okay. And then when I'm stitching, and this is where the crux of it was, I was coming up, going, you know, doing it the way you show. And I would say maybe 60-70% of the time I was getting the two strands to lay pretty flat or you know, the way they should. But I was still finding myself picking up the laying tool and rearranging threads more often than I wanted to. And I watched that video where you just stitched and didn't say anything, and you never flinched. I mean, you just flew. And that's what I was hoping I would get. So is there some practice involved there till I get these X's to lay right?
I think that there's some practice involved. And then that material, the fabric that you're working on is Weeks Dye Works. And the weave on that, I struggle with Weeks Dye Works fabric. The weave on Weeks, I mean, it's beautiful fabric, but it's a little looser.
Yes.
Loosely woven. And so when I'm doing those very same ornaments, and, I struggle a little bit with laying my stitches on that as well. So it kind of depends on the weave of the fabric, like Lakeside, Zweigert. Those, you know, you'll go just as fast as what I was doing on my Stitch With Me video. But like Weeks Dye Works, it's, you have to kind of watch that. You know, you kind of have to massage them in there a little bit.
Okay, but, you okay. Know,
Gary, have you ever tried a snag nabbit?
No.
Okay, I would suggest, highly recommend getting a snag nabbit. They're like $2, less than $2, and you can find them anywhere. Clover makes them. And when I have legs of my stitches that maybe don't look quite that great, you just like snag nabbit, and by golly, they come out looking great. So.
Okay.
Get a snag nabbit. In my video, there's towards the end, I think I do use the snag nabbit in a couple of areas.
Oh, that's what that was. I wondered what the heck you were poking through the cloth there.
Yeah, that's a snag nabbit.
Okay.
And, what that does, it's for sweaters. Like, you know how if you get like you're wearing a sweater and it gets like a pull on it.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
You take that snag nabbit and it's like a needle on one end, and then on the other end it's got like this swirly, like swirl design, and you stick it through the sweater and grabs the thread and pulls it through the sweater so it hides the snag. And on cross stitch, it's the same theory, is that if you have like a thread that's a leg of your stitch that might be higher than the rest of the stitches, or a loose leg that you didn't weave under well enough comes up on the top when you pull your thread, you just snag nabbit it down, and and it just comes out perfect. So I use a Snagnabbit if I see my like a leg or an arm of my cross stitch looking a little funky. I'll use a Snagnabbit. So.
Okay, and I'm glad to hear you say that about that cloth, because I was fighting the entire time to keep my tension even, but not collapse the threads. I was really fighting with it, and I'm used to doing a lot of needlepoint where you can crank pretty good on the stuff, and it was slow going there for a while. I was getting kind of frustrated.
Yeah, and you know, like I have a beautiful piece in it that I've stitched, and it's done on a week's linen, and lower count, like a 30 count, I think is what it is. And, it's beautiful. It's done in silks, but if you look really closely at my stitches, you can see wonkiness, and it's from the weave, and I won't take that to the fair because I know that I'll get dinged, and so I won't take it. That's just one of the things you have to really work with when you work with weeks. But I will tell you one thing. I don't know if you've heard me on my videos talk about Best Press. It's like a spray. It's not a starch. It's a starch.
Oh, yes. Yes, you have. Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, if you best press your week's dye works linen before you start stitching it, so you best press the heck out of it and iron it and then put it on whatever in your hoop or whatever, that'll clear up a lot of your weave issues with weak dye works.
Oh, okay.
It'll give it a little bit of little oomph so that
something
weave,
yeah
it gives it a little bit of stability and it makes it easier to stitch. So I always just best press it right before I put it in my Q-snap or whatever I'm going to stitch it in, and that has made a world of difference.
All right, I'll give that a try. I've stitched on the partridge one is the pear, but I probably too late to best press the rest of it, or go ahead and do it.
You mean on what you're already stitching right now, you can best press it. Just make sure that it's on the backside and kind of like on a terry cloth towel to protect the stitches, the fluffiness of your stitches. Best press it from the back, and you can do it right now. So.
All right, I'll give that a try. Where do I get this stuff? Grocery store?
You can get it at Walmart, Joann's, Amazon, anywhere.
Okay. Okay. All right, I'll give that a try. Cause yeah, I mean, I was getting frustrated. I just wasn't getting the quality that I wanted out of it. And, I could see the technique working, but the cloth was definitely working against me. So, yeah. All right. Let's see. What else? Did I have any other questions of you? No, and I can't thank you enough for the diagonal pin stitch. Holy smokes. I am wearing that thing out. That is just fantastic. Everything that now, all the cross stitching I'm doing right now, it's all getting started with that diagonal pin stitch. That's just fantastic. And,
You know, I thought that was another one of the, oh my goodness, I invented fire when I did that. But, I thought, boy, am I a genius. But then I've come and I've found that other people had come on to that. I had always done it the other way, down the, down the center of the X. I'd done it that way for years to do scattered stitches or start my stitches. Especially when I was doing over dyes, if I couldn't do a loop method, I always started with the traditional pin stitch. But I got dinged on that at the fair last year, and because they could see the arm of the pin stitch on the side, kind of showing from the side. So.
Oh.
I was dinging around, trying to figure out how can you start it without, and I thought, I wonder if I can do it this way, and it would just be the bottom leg of my stitch. And so I started doing it, and I started doing it that way all the time. And this winter, I was like, man, this is really fabulous. I mean, you can really start, I can start a thread, and I bet you I don't even have like an eighth of an inch behind it as a tail. And I can get it almost flush with the back. and start it that way. And because I'm going back across where I brought up in the center, it anchors it every time, even the smallest amounts. So I was real excited about that too. And then I started searching online to, you know, think, oh gosh, has somebody, you know, I need to tell people about this. And then I figured out that other people knew about it. But I really thought I was something there for a while, but that bubble was burst. So anyways.
That's all right. You had a moment there. It was worth it.
I did have a moment.
Yeah. But it really is, because this Shepherd's Bush stocking I'm working on, I mean, there's three or four stars that just sit out in the middle of nowhere. And mm-hmm. and I know you can use an away knot, and I'm so whatever about anchoring threads that, you know, my away knot is like 4 miles down the road. And, you know, and so to start those stars that just sit out there by themselves, to do that with the pin stitch, boy, you know, I'm up and running right now. I don't have to knot up and figure out where I'm going to put the away knot and make sure I have enough so I can weave it in afterwards and, mm-hmm. and all those things. And boy, I just pin stitch and go. And it's fantastic. It really is. So.
Yeah, it's fast. It's fast. And I think it's, you know, structurally sound. And,
locks it. It locks it down right now. I mean, you can tell that's not going anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a whole new moment for me when I started doing that. And man, I use it all the time now. I almost like it better than the loop method, to be honest with you, because I feel like, you know, I don't know. I just think that it's just really a great way to start your thread. It really honestly is. And I use a lot of overdyes anyway, so I can't do a loop method with overdyes. So right. I use it almost, you know, predominantly to start my threads. So
yeah, I don't know why I've never been a fan of the loop method just in general. I'd rather start it some other way. But this pin stitch, mm-hmm. boy, you must have some real thread Nazis at that fair of yours. Holy smokes. They must be serious judges.
You know, I think that they're from, they don't tell you who they are, or, you know, you don't know who they are or what their name is or anything like that. And, I have had really wonderful ribbons, but I've never been the grand champion. And, you know, I feel like I've had a lot of success in my life with cross stitch, and why in the world am I not the grand champion? But, anyways, they are very, it has, I will say this, and a lot of, you know, people I feel need to do this. If you have a fair or any kind of contest near you, you need to enter your things into the fair. It makes you, it's hard to take. It's a little hard to take to listen to people say negative things about your stitching.
Right, but then how do you learn though?
That's what I'm going to say.
You're not doing the right thing if you don't let somebody tell you the thing that you're not doing well.
Right, and I have grown as a stitcher so much since I started doing the fairs. I mean, I don't always agree with everything that they say, but by golly, I think really hard about every stitch that I lay, or everything that I do. I really think mm-hmm. hard about it. And, it's made me 100% better stitcher than what I was. So we'll see what this year's fair brings, but I highly urge anybody that has a chance to enter into their local fair or anything, you should do it, because that just draws more people to the, hey, I can do this, and look at that, isn't that great? And that's what we need to do, is we need to perpetuate the art of handwork, because in this day and age, a lot of people don't have the tenacity to sit and do something, and it's an art form. And mm-hmm. It's my Calgon moment. If I didn't have stitching in my life, I don't know who Vonna Pfeiffer would be. That's stitching makes me. I mean, I'm being serious. That is just, if I didn't have stitching, I don't know who I'd be. I really don't. So
crazed and cranky.
probably crazed and cranky. You're right.
So, but I think you hit on it when it comes to this judging thing. The key is, rather than getting all bent out of shape over the critiques, it sounds like you say, all right, let me evaluate what's being said and apply it and see if I get better and use it, even no matter how it's presented, use it as something constructive that you can apply to get better. And sounds like that's the way you approach it then.
Well, I get mad at first. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to
lie. Yes.
I'm not going to lie. I get mad at first. And I might think, well, by golly, how dare they say anything like that? But then after you cool off, I mean, it's hard to, I mean, I don't know. Maybe other people can take criticism well. I don't take criticism well if I feel like it's not deserved. You know what I mean? At first, and you know, when you have a baby that you spent hundreds of hours on and you take it to a judge and they say, well, this baby is freaking ugly. And you did not dress this baby right. Anyways, it hurts. At first I'll get mad and then I'll save the comment cards and, I'll read through them again after the dust has settled a little bit. And then I might get mad again. But then after I keep on reading them and then I look at what they say and I look at my piece and then I think, you know, they're right. You know, I need to change this or that. And that's how I've learned as much as I've learned, and I'll research it. And you know, there's not very many resources out on the internet that tells you about tension, that tells you about how to, you know, look, try this. This might work better to lay your, you know, Mary Corbett has a fabulous blog. I know you've talked about her before on your podcast. She's about the only person where you can find good quality, down to earth, useful information about a wide variety of subjects dealing with stitching. And, you know, she goes way beyond, you know, what I do, because all I do is cross stitch. And that's why I try to do what I do on my blog, because I'm trying to be the voice for the people that just crossed it, you know. And I've learned a lot. I've researched a lot. I've read a lot. And then I've tried to do practical knowledge that I've learned and try to come up with a way that makes me better as a stitcher. And then once I find it out, well, then, you know, why do I want to keep it to myself? I want to tell everybody how to be better stitchers so we all can be wonderful stitchers. So I try to share it with the people that read my blog or listen to my floss tube or whatever. So I think it's all learning. It's good to pass the information. Sharing is caring. So
there we go. There we go. Sharing is caring. Writing that down right now.
So we just have to build a little bit of a thicker skin, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, and then you have to know that they're not out to get you. You know, they don't know who you are. They don't know who, you know, I am, I don't think. I mean, they're not supposed to look at your name. Mm-hmm. And, so they don't know who I am and they're not doing it to come after me. And you just have to remember and tell yourself that, and that you'll be a better stitcher once you, you know, take the criticism. Yeah. So, and that's what it really, honest to heaven, has made me a better stitcher. And I think another thing that's made me a better stitcher is that my only craft is cross stitch. That's all I do. And, you know, rather being a dabbler in many, I try to be a master of one. So, you know, I think that helps me too, to be the best stitcher I can be. So anyways.
Yeah. No question about that.
It's sort of inspiring to, you know, I think what you've hit on is the strategy in entering a fair, right? So, mm-hmm. So for me, I'm listening to you and I'm listening to what you get out of it. And most people, I think the whole idea of entering a fair, especially if you come from an area where fairs are common, which in your, you know, metropolitan area, it's not, I think, as common as it is, other places.
Mm-hmm.
But you enter because you've done something you're proud of and you want to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what contests are and that's what people do. But I'm kind of enamored with the idea of entering a fair simply for the idea of not winning. So what I mean by that is this. For myself, as you're talking, I'm thinking, what if I did a piece with no intention of winning whatsoever? Simply for the idea that as part of the judging, somebody will look at my work and be able to tell me something that I will learn out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. that's one of the things that I'm encountering here in New York, ironically, you know, in this place of a million billion people, is that there aren't stitchers around that I can work with. And so I'm working remotely and learning from people like you and Gary and watching, you know, something as simple as watching you stitch and oh, okay, you're doing it that way. That's better. This could be a good learning tool is to, mm-hmm. it's to submit something for criticism instead mm-hmm. of for, you know, for the idea of winning.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, I'm seriously considering, like I should, you know, because I'm sure there are things coming up over the summer and the fall. And I kind of like the idea of doing a piece simply for the idea of giving to somebody who has some knowledge and expertise, assuming that, you know, the judges are fair and mm-hmm. and smart and experienced, and just throwing it in there and having them come back and say, all right, here's all the things that you could have done better.
Right.
I think that's valuable.
Yes, and it is very valuable. And the other very valuable thing is that you're putting your work out there for others to see, and it'll inspire people. I can't tell you how many people that, you know, because once they're judged, they'll put your, you know, they put the all of the entered pieces up on the wall at my fair, uh-huh. and it'll have your name on it, you know, and if you want a ribbon, it'll have your ribbon by it. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, go to the fair and then they'll see me and they say, hey, I saw your cross stitching. Man, that made me want to start cross stitching.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, in that way, it perpetuates the art. And so,
yes.
you know, it's like a double good thing. You're like learning how to be a better stitcher for yourself. And then you're also perpetuating and sharing your art with other people to inspire them to become stitchers or to give it a try. And, so it's wonderful. It's a wonderful venue for people to share what their passion is and in the process make themselves a better stitcher or whatever, painter. Photographer, whatever
anything,
you are.
Anything, anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like this idea. I do.
Well, I hope you enter something.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I really have no, I mean, I'm sure there's a tiny part of me that, you know, would like to do well, obviously, but I really am, you know, as a beginner, see, and that's the difference, right? If this was something that I have, if I was entering a quilt or a sewn article of clothing, I would have an expectation that it would be good because it's something that I've done for a million years and you know, I can do it well. And so then if somebody came back and said, no, this is terrible, then I would be upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a fair expectation that I know what I'm doing, right?
Right.
Whereas in this case, I don't have that. I have no preconceived notion of my own expertise. So,
yeah.
So for them to say, you know, yeah, this is here's all the things that you could do better. For me, it's just it's an opportunity to learn. And you're right. It maybe that's part of it too, is that there just isn't that much needlework going on here. You know, again, we're having mm-hmm. this resurgence of knitting and crocheting and sort of yarn work.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in urban areas here, but this sort of traditional needlework is really very far behind. So
yeah, and it's taken a real hit. I mean, you think that there's a lot of people doing it. If you watch FlossTube or you read blogs or you go to a Facebook group, you think, oh yeah, man, what are they saying that it's, but then when you're right, when you walk through, even here, you walk through the, you know, a coffee shop or something, there's, you know, three or four people sitting there knitting, but you don't mm-hmm. ever see anybody cross stitching, you know,
no,
so
no.
that you're right. I agree with that. And,
right.
So that's another way of getting it out there to share with the people, because I think a lot of people still, and you'll hear this over and over and over, especially if you watch FlossTube videos, is that, well, I stitched in the 70s and 80s, but you know, it was teddy bears and ducks and
right,
boy, I
right,
didn't
right.
realize that, boy, it really has changed. It has changed a lot. And, it's sad that people don't know that, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so I, that's one of the things that, you know, it's my passion to share and, hope that I inspire somebody to pick it up and start it for themselves. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I certainly, and I was a prime case of that because, you know, Gary and I would talk about stitching and knitting actually. And he asked about needlework and I said, yeah, I said exactly the same thing. Yeah. I think I did some accrual work when I was 12, and then I did samplers when I was little. But now I haven't done anything because, you know, who wants to do, like, one of those, you know, giant eagles holding an arrow in their talons, or a tiger or the wolf looking at the moon. Like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with any of those things, but they're just kind of not my style.
Right.
And he said, oh, no, 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 sweetheart. Let me show you some things. And just sent me photos.
I did not say sweetheart.
No, you didn't. That's true. That's true. You would never say that. But,
no.
But
plus, you just slapped me all the way from Long Island. So
it was implied in the tone of, oh, you have no idea what's out there, do you? And let me be the person to enlighten you, because it's a whole new world out there. And from that moment, I was completely hooked, because you're right. It's because it's so much more challenging and interesting to stitch now, because it's not all the same old, you know, you're not just covering canvas anymore.
Right.
So, you know, and I think you're right. If people understood that it's not like latch hooking. Remember latch hooking?
Yeah.
You know, that's another craft that I did as a child, you know.
Uh-huh.
Long summers with six children and my mom saying, go outside and play for 9 hours and go occupy yourself. Latch hooking was a thing. But, you know, it's the same repetitive motion again and again, and you're not really doing anything. And needlepoint and cross stitch is not that at all. It's so much more complicated and so much more intellectually satisfying, I think.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
Two questions I got to get in, and we're going to run out of time, so I'm getting them in right now. Vonna, you see with your finishing business and, of course, all the stuff you do, you stitch yourself, you see a ton of needlework. And so I have two questions. One is, based on what you see, what tips could you offer people that would make their stitching better? And then what could you say to people that would make it easier for you to finish, that would give them a better finished result of their product, or if nothing else, make it so you could do it faster for them with the same quality? Because I'm sure even if they come in a little wonky, you fight like the daylights to get them perfect before you send them back out. But what things can people do to improve their stitching, and what can they do to send you a piece that is easier for you to finish and at some point, I would suggest, better result?
Well, the first thing that to make it easier for me to finish is, don't be a linen or an Aida miser. Mm-hmm. I get so many things where, you know, we have four things on one piece that they want made into ornaments and different shapes and all this stuff. And there's like 1 inch in between all the stitch pieces. And, I can't walk on water and I can't make a margin bigger in between things that are all
right.
So, don't be a miser on your linen. That's the number one thing. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, and even experienced stitchers will like think, oh, well, there was plenty of room. No, there's not plenty of room. I have to have at least 2 inches around everything in order to finish. So if you're going to put two ornaments on one piece of linen, I need to have 4 inches in between your motifs. So that's the first thing.
Okay, so that's 2 inches all sides, no matter what the shape.
On all sides, yeah. No matter what the shape, I need at least 2 inches on all sides. Because think about it, you know, like, I have something that happened, you know, earlier this year, and, oh, I want this as oval shape, you know, ornament, a flat oval-shaped ornament. And there was like literally, I would have had like a half an inch from the edge of the design to where I had to cut. And, you know, think about an oval. It's fatter in the middle and it's shorter on the tops and the bottoms. And trying to explain that to her, you know, was just hard. And she thought I was being difficult and that I wasn't. And so that's the first thing. Just don't be a linen miser. We spend all this money on threads and needles and thread heaven and all this patterns and, just give yourself some room. You don't be a thread miser or a linen miser. As far as what I, like what you said, I see a lot of stitching and I do see a lot of stitching. And I always tell, you know, that's the number one thing is when people are writing me to ask me to finish for them, they'll say, and please don't look at my backs. And I don't judge people's backs. I really don't. My backs aren't the, you know, the most lovely thing, some of them. And I don't judge backs. But I will say the two things that people do that make it hard for me and I feel make their finished product turn out less superior than what it could be is carrying threads, especially dark colored threads on a light colored linen, carrying it from one stitch to, you know, like three or four or five stitches over, bad. That's bad, bad, bad. And there's no way I can hide that. And I've even gone so far as when I'm finishing and there's carried threads like that, I will actually cut it myself. And I've come to the point that, you know, I know that people will probably say, oh yeah, that's true. Not true. I don't charge that much really for the time and effort that I put into finishing. I don't charge that much. And, I cannot spend an hour on one ornament, you know, fixing people's carrying threads.
Right.
So I have quit doing that. And, but so if you carry your threads, there's no way I can disguise it. I don't try to fix it anymore. The other thing is just clipping your threads when you get done. Like once you weave it if you're going to weave it to an end of a row, you make sure that you clip that thread flush with the end of the row or whatever. I can't tell you how many, I mean, it's almost every piece that I get to finish. There will be thread, you know, tails sticking out at the edge of the row and you can see that. And I've been dinged on that at the fair myself. So I'm very sensitive because that's one of the things that I've been dinged on. So when you weave your threads, you cut flush with the back of the fabric so that you don't have any little wispies or thread tails hanging out at the end, because you'll see it on the front. Every time you'll see it on the front. Even if it's a, you know, if it's black fabric, you won't. But if it's a light colored neutral fabric, you'll see it from the front. So those are the two things that I can say.
Do you, when you receive pieces, are they generally clean or do you end up having to wash them in some way? Or is that something you just won't
no.
do?
Yeah, I don't wash it. I've had people ask me to wash and I won't wash them because what if a thread runs or something and it's your baby? So, now I iron and I do all that stuff, but they come to me what I hope to be finished and then, you know, clean and ready to go. And, I get asked sometimes to, can you do French knots? I can't do French knots. Can you please do French knots? And, I will do that. I don't like to do that because it's not, you know, it's your work. It's not my work. I'm the finisher. I'm not the French knot maker, but I will do it. And, but no, I will not wash anything just because, I just don't want to take that responsibility in case a thread runs or something like that. Then it's my baby. So I ask everything to be washed and clean for me before I touch it. So.
Right. I don't mind doing French knots, but I'm telling you right now, I'd charge a buck a knot. Sure, I'll do them all day for you, a buck a knot.
I just do it and just do it out of the goodness of my heart, but I don't like it. Well, because, you know, a lot of times they'll say do French knots and they won't send the pattern. And then I don't have the pattern, so where am I supposed to know where the, unless it's like eyes or something, I don't know where the French knots are supposed to go. Anyways, I have to say, you know, where can you show me a picture? Or I get asked a lot of things. Let me tell you, it's true. And I get asked to do a lot of things, and I try to, you know, do as much as I can for people. But I have to draw the line somewhere, because if I, you know, it's a getting to the point where I'm so busy finishing. I'm working 6 and 7 days a week, 8 and 12 hours a day finishing. I've finished, at the end of today, I have finished over 300 things since January 9th.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah. So think about that. Think about how many, you know, I guess this at the end of this month, it'll be half a year is gone and I have finished 300 things. So think about how many things I'll finish by the time December.
Right.
I'm really busy. So I can't take, you know, I take as much time as I can because I'm, You know, I always say great finishing takes a lot of time, and I only do spectacular finishing. And I say that to people. And so, you know, it takes a lot of time. Finishing takes a lot of time. So I try to do the very, I only send back what I believe to be as near perfect as what I can make it. And, so anyways, it just takes a lot, it just takes a lot of time, and I can't hold everybody's hand, you know, and wash their projects and this and that for them. So. Right.
What's the best way for people to ship pieces to you? Rolled up on tubes, or there's got to be a way you prefer to see them so that they arrive in the best shape?
Well, I have a whole business plan that explains everything from start to finish on how I want things to arrive to me. I have had things, you know, you see everything. I will have things wadded up and thrown in something and literally mailed to me. And then I have things almost delivered to me by all the king's horses and all the king's men. So there's a wide range in how I receive things. But what I ask people to do is, I don't really think it matters if it's flat or rolled up. I will have some clients that only send to me where it's rolled up and inside a tube. And I don't see that it's any different, honestly, from just making sure that it's inside. Like, I like my things to be in Ziploc bags, kind of flat, because, and then mailed priority. That's, you know, I like it to be mailed priority because it's more, it's quick. It has insurance. They pay more attention to priority mail than they do first class mail. So, I ask in my, you know, my clients to put them inside a Ziploc bag, like each project inside a Ziploc bag. And if they have special directions or their material that they want used or their pom poms or whatever, put inside so that each finish that they have has the difference on how they want it, and anything that accompanies that or is to be incorporated into that finish in a Ziploc bag, and then just stacked or whatever inside a priority mailbox is how I like it to come. That doesn't always happen, but that's what I think is most valuable or the best way to send it. But it doesn't matter to me. Like I said, I've had it wadded up and thrown, you know, emailed to, or, you know, first class. I've had it, you know, I've had overnight, you know, I had to sign for it, FedEx. I mean, you know, I've had it all different kinds of ways. So it's, but I think my preference is just flat inside a Ziploc bag, because that protects it from moisture, from the elements. And if anything, God forbid, would get wet or, you know, in it, that it would be protected in a Ziploc bag. So that's how I like it done.
Let's shift gears. You are doing some really cool things with your patriotic room. And then you sent me, for this podcast, you sent me a couple of pictures of pieces that you had finished that really are fantastic. But talk about your patriotic room. I really think that's a great idea.
Well, it's just our office in our front room, and I just want everything in there to be patriotic. So I've been doing some smalls. I have stuff that I've done through the years, but I've really been focusing on it this year on finishing things exclusively for that room that is all patriotic. I think that it's important that we have pride in our country. And so that I'm doing that, and I'm teaching my kids, you don't have pride in our country by doing that. And there's been a lot of really great designs that's come out recently that is patriotic. So I've finished Little House Needleworks, has a thread pack collaboration with Classic Colorworks, and I finished those three this year, and I mounted them on, you know, you don't have to frame everything. That's the beauty of stitching smaller designs. You don't have to frame it. You can finish it really cute and hang it still like a picture if you want to. And so I did those. Brenda Gervais has had last year she had a limited edition thing and a cloche. It was called Flag Day at the Potting Shed, which I think I sent Gary a picture of that. I finished that this year. I finished a Blackbird Designs with an Uncle Sam hat. So patriotic designs will be in this room. I have, I'm working on that one that we did the Stitch With Me video on. That's the, Let Freedom Ring by Lila Studio. I've got a lot of big designs that I'm working on that's patriotic. You know, the early Americans by Little House Needleworks. I'm working on that. So I want people to, when they walk in that room, just drop their teeth when they see all my patriotic stuff. And it's getting close. It's getting really close. It's great. But another reason why I like patriotic designs is my birthday is July 5th. And my whole life, my birthday's always been celebrated on July 4th because that's when the family was together and it was just easier, you know. And so I always tell my kids that all the fireworks aren't because of, our patriotism, you know, our celebrating July 4th. It's because they're, you know, in anticipation of my birthday. So,
Right. That's the way I go with it.
Absolutely. So I consider myself an honorary Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I think I need to have a patriotic room, so I'm going to have one. So that's the way I look at it.
I think it's just a great idea, and the pieces you've been choosing to go in there, they all go together and have a similar look, but they're different. And I'm really anxious. I'm sure you'll show us a video or something when you feel like it's at least mostly completed. I don't know if it ever gets completed, but I'm sure you'll show us something because it's gonna. I drop your teeth. Yeah, I got to believe it's gonna be really awe-inspiring.
It is. It's gonna be like you'll just faint, Gary, when I see it. And of course, I'm gonna do. I plan on doing a once I get it, especially when the early Americans piece is done and framed. I want to do it, and I want to take like a video tour of it. Like here's this, here's that. Swear. Ooh and ah over it. I have the best time sharing everything that I do because I get such positive response. And that's just what's so, I mean, that's how come I want to learn, you know, do more, you know, stuff and share things because I just, you know, I just have such great followers and wonderful friends that I've made through my sharing. And I want to inspire other people to do it. And I just share because I get such great response. I really do. So.
Yeah, well, the fact that you're so sharing is such a plus for everyone because people could go through your videos and read your blog and learn so much. And a lot of finishers just finish because that's how they make money. But you do that and show everybody how to do it on top of it, and I think that's just fantastic. So.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
We got to stop. Hate that. That means you have to come back because I have more questions. So that means you got to come back.
This has been great. I feel like I've learned.
Oh, I want to come back. Will you let me come back, Gary? I want to come back.
Of course.
Please. We should. I want to do another. I can't wait to do another of your Stitch With Me's, though. I think those are so great.
Yeah, I'm going to do another one. I'll get another one going here soon. Like I said, I bought my gadget. I hope that it'll be up close and personal.
Yeah.
All right, we got to end this. Vonna, thank you so much. Really enjoyed the conversation once again. And thanks to everyone for listening and for the continued support. And we'll be back next week.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Christine. I always enjoy talking to both of you.